My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are continuing our discussion. We've got part two of our discussion of Mass Effect, which is a third-person shooter RPG developed by BioWare and released in 2007.
Yeah. This is part two, largely the body of the plot of the game. We talked about the mechanic in the first part.
Yeah. A little bit of the setup. We walked around the Citadel, talked to some of those folks, and now we're headed out on the different missions that they have given us to go after that bad guy, Saren.
They, you know, three spokes on this. Each spoke has three spokes. It's this weird, like, fractal nature that BioWare likes to do. Like when you get into these dungeons, not every one of them, but a lot of them are like, go do the three things.
Yes.
Once you get there. So there's this weird kind of fractal nature. We're going to start out here with Theros, but it's not going to make any sense if you haven't listened to the last episode. We say that every time. Nobody ever does that. But listen to the last episode.
Maybe the people who do it, we've never heard from them because they're ashamed.
They quit. Yeah. Or that's just their last episode of the podcast. Like, God, why did they just start Mass Effect in the middle? I'm begging you. We didn't.
I don't have time to read any titles.
Yeah. Get it in my veins. God, I love Theros. I was just Google searching for podcasts about Theros. You're looking for Theranos. It's a totally different subject. Yeah.
There's a lot of, it's pretty saturated.
There's a lot of podcasts about that. Yeah. We figured we'd start one, but.
We're doing this one first because it's going to complete our crew, but also the game very strongly hints toward heading to Theros first here because Saren's second in command, this Asari named Matriarch Benezia, she has a daughter who is rolling about, and she's off over here doing research, and we need to hunt her down just in case either she's working with Benezia or might have information about her.
Yeah. And we have a very conspicuous open spot.
Yes.
On our crew. So we go to the Artemis Tau cluster in order to find the planet Theorem. We talked about that last episode, how you kind of zoom in and out, mostly cataloging planets. But you'll get a little ping when it's one where there's a story.
Yes.
Thing. And this is the one where Liara's dig site, the daughter, is.
And we land, and we are in the Mako, and a dropship flies up and drops off a whole bunch of geth that we need to deal with as we kind of like ride around in these tribes two canyons.
Yes. Again, like this part, it's not cover shooting.
It's weird.
it's not cover shooting. It's kind of fun because it's different.
Yeah.
And you do your bump and jump to dodge. It's real weird. You go through this, you fight a bunch of them. Do we talk about the XP multiplier thing that changed for the Legendary Edition?
No, we had not.
Okay. Yeah, this is interesting. So I was having fun with these, and when I was reading reviews and stuff of Mass Effect, everyone is complaining about the Mako. And I was like, oh, it's because it controls like shit. But that doesn't seem like good enough reason to complain about it. It's back in the day, you used to get an XP penalty for things you killed in the Mako. So apparently, people with a lot of time on their hands would cherry tap enemies. That you would get an enemy to like 90% of its health, then get out of the Mako and finish it on foot, so you got the full XP.
That sounds terrible.
I saw references to that multiple times. I'm not saying that everyone played it that way, obviously.
Right.
But I saw that was a known strategy Absolutely. Your time on Earth is limited, gamers.
It is so
You are
limited,
going to die.
Gamers. Yeah.
You can't right do now. That. You can't spend your time doing that.
Yeah.
Now they just give you full XP because fuck it. Who gives a shit? Like it's what they should have done in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, somebody might grind XP a little bit and get, you know, 3/5 of a skill point, you know, towards something you can't perceive the difference on, you know, who cares?
That's in addition to, them changing them, like the level cap. So it used to be, you could get up to level 60 or whatever, and you gained experience. Just all the numbers were kind of adjusted for that. With the Legendary remake, they bumped it down to a level cap of 30, and you essentially gain experience twice as fast.
Yes.
And they give you more points to allocate, which I think is good. Faster movement, even if it is on stuff that you can barely perceive, is better than slow movement on stuff that you can barely perceive. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a marginal difference.
Yeah.
Marginal effect.
As somebody who has played this game 3, maybe 4 times, Gary, I've never done the Mako EXP the optimization.
Shuffle.
No, never did that. So just in case you're wondering if you have been podcasting.
If you're a goddamn psychopath.
I mean,
I'm going to open up your fridge and find a bunch of hands.
Walking around with a briefcase full of walnuts.
Like, yeah.
I need you to know like what kind of psychopath I am and am not. And I am not that kind.
Yeah. If I don't know by now, but anywho, this is just kind of breezy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get there. Eventually you get out of the Mako. You have to leave it behind because there's a little wall. The car has a waist-high wall. It can't jump over.
It's the target balls.
Yeah.
I can't get past the target balls. Yeah.
Geth are dropped outside, so you shoot them.
Uh-huh.
And this is where we're introduced to the Geth Armature and the Geth Stalkers.
Yeah, the Geth Armature is like a big, it's like a big dinosaur-shaped Geth. Looks like an iPod dinosaur a little bit.
Yes.
It's fine. It's just a big it's just a big HP sponge that happens to shoot a little bit faster. The Geth Stalkers can just eat me.
They can lick my bridge. They got rid of them. Like, I love learning it just like, this thing sucks. We got rid of it in Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
So the way the Armatures always look like portal turrets to me as well.
Yeah.
The Stalkers, the way they work is they crawl around really fast and they jump from point to point. They kind of zip around and then they put a little bead on you before they attack you. That's how you're supposed to know where they're at.
Yeah.
And they do disabling attacks.
Yes.
On you in addition to normal attacks. The frustrating thing about the Geth Stalkers is that anything you have that isn't just a bullet has a wind up.
Yep.
So you can't use any abilities against them, really.
No.
They just move out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Like immediately as soon as your cursor is over them. So you got to plink them down with whatever weapon you happen to have. Heaven help you if you are somebody who uses a shotgun or a sniper rifle for that. What is also uninspiring about them is in any given arena, they have like 3 points that they jump to.
Yeah.
You know? So like they're not really reacting with
or
interacting with like the shape of the encounter. Yeah.
No. It doesn't and which kind of like contributes to a general sense that does not feel like these are designed encounters. You know, like the geometry and enemy loadouts do not feel thoughtfully chosen in this. I'm not saying that no thought went into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless of the effort that went into it, the end result does not feel it feels haphazard.
Yes.
You fight these guys inside. We find Liara, and Liara is suspended inside this Prothean security device.
Yeah, she's held up in like an electric magnetic field. And the only way to disactivate it is inside this chamber that we cannot get into directly.
Yes. So we have to deactivate that. And on the way, we're going to run into Geth and a Krogan who's leading them.
Yeah.
They got Krogans.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the way to get in...
They're called Krogans in the Midwest. They're actually called Ralphs. Out in California.
Yeah.
And Fred Meyer
up in the PNW. Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Hey, rest of the world.
Take that. Non-English speaking countries.
And they're called Tesco's in.
Yeah. They're called. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the way we have to get around her, there's a mining laser that we're going to use to like bust our way up and in, but we're interrupted and ambushed by this Krogan battlemaster. After we get in and free her, Krogans in this game are almost always shock units. They have biotics and they can move around very quickly. What they're going to try to do is get close to you and then shotgun you to death.
Weirdly, and like this is one of the only times I ever died in this game,
mm-hmm.
where to Krogan's just walking up to me and one-shotting me.
Yeah.
You know, so once you realize that it's just a priority thing, like you can ignore the small arms fire from everything except for them.
Yeah.
And also realizing once my biotics got up to snuff and I could use crowd control on them.
Yeah, yeah. All you have to do
just knock them out or float them and that's it.
Yeah, just do a toss. And then while they are doing the standing up animation, you can just plink them down. It's fine.
Yeah. They're a pain, though. This is also the first time my companions went down.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to use my
Unity
group hug. Yeah. Unity ability to get them back up.
Yeah. But they're here. So Krogan are mercenaries, and some of them will happily work with Saren. They're here to kidnap Liara and take her to Saren because of her research into something called the Conduit. We know that the Conduit is what Saren is going after, and we overheard Benezia saying that the Conduit is the key to the Reapers.
Yes. Yeah. We don't know exactly what it is yet.
Right.
So we do the fight. It's tough. But if you crowd control the battle master, it's okay. Mm-hmm. The mining laser, when we set it off, sets off this seismic event. Mm-hmm. So the crew escapes the facility in a cutscene before the whole place collapses.
Right.
The crew, including Liara.
Right.
We've got.
So Liara, she is an Asari. She mm-hmm. is the pure biotic on the team. Is able to use Singularity, which is a very powerful ability for doing an AOE kind of like crowd control disable on folks. And her personality is she hasn't spent much time around people. She's very kind of stilted. Yeah.
In this game, her personality is kind of NA, you know, like a little bit non-applicable. Like I understand she gets more interesting.
Yeah.
In this game, I found her very bland and weirdly fan servicey.
Mm-hmm.
Being the race of technically no gender, but you know, all beautiful women who are encouraged to breed outside their species.
Right.
I got real gross vibes from Liara from this one. You know, like, this is here for player appeal.
Yeah.
She reads us her research, and she spent 50 years researching the cause of the Prothean extinction, which to her is nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
We find out that the Protheans weren't the first race to disappear. There were many before them. Whenever a civilization gets big enough to span the galaxy, something comes along and wipes them out.
Right. And then Shepard informs her, like, hey, I have this, I have this vision from the beacon. That must be what I saw.
Scream Mad George made it. There's a decomposing rat. There's a pig's head floating on a turntable.
Yeah, there's a guy shaking a bunch.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. And so, putting it together, these things called the Reapers, they're what does the reaping. That must be what I saw, and that must be what is responsible for this cycle. But again, it's weird that they wipe everything out and then just leave.
Yeah. The council gives you a call. This happens after you finish every spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to yell at you no matter what you do. Go back to last episode. It's a little bit frustrating how it makes this feel less like a role-playing game to me, mm-hmm. that it doesn't really matter what I do.
No.
They just don't like it. Like they're positioned narratively to be hard ass, the chief mm-hmm. to our renegade cop. And no matter what you do, they react the same way.
Yeah.
So the Turian is super mad because you destroyed a Prothean ruin.
Right.
Could
have been, could have been invaluable, could have advanced our, the galactic civilization by, light years or whatever. The Turian very specifically is impossible to please. That's like a mimetic thing, it's the joke. And now to the Russian judge, right?
Yes. It's pretty irksome. I started hanging up on him at this point, which again is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how anyone plays this as a paragon.
Mm-hmm.
It's so limp. Mm-hmm. If you play it as a jerk, it at least has a little spark.
Yeah.
Drama happens.
Mm-hmm.
So in between missions, we can check in on our crew
mm-hmm.
Here and see how they're doing. We can check in on File Not Found. Caden, he's suspicious about the council's inactivity when it comes to this, potential extinction threat.
Yeah.
And then we learn about humans and biotics, which is basically his entire storyline.
Yeah.
He exists. Headaches the man.
Yeah. I love that band.
the Psyduck that we have in our crew.
Yeah. But his backstory is like, humans not necessarily like naturally gifted at expressing biotics. Biotics are also, like, they take advantage of this element zero, which enables the mass effect manipulation of stuff as if it is
gravity
weightless. Yeah, it's gravity magic. People need to be implanted. And they need to be trained. So he was part of this, basically like a Project Montauk kind of thing, where he was abducted because of his latent psychic abilities and run through these horrible experiments. You know, basically forcibly implanted with these outdated devices, in order to get humanity over this curve, so they could kind of match with other more natural biotics. Yeah. And that has a body count. He talks about like the people in his class and how many didn't make it.
So many people died from being on USB2. we talked to Liara. This is whenever we have a new alien race on the ship. She just tells us the source book entry for her race. You know, she's like, I'm not like Benezia. I'm an Asari. Here's how they work. And you can ask questions. This is, you know, I think the coolest bit of world building in the game is just having these aliens tell you what they're about.
Yeah.
You know, and the idea here, again, it feels a little fan service-y. They're encouraged to breed with humans like you, the player. Mm-hmm. But she is a little bit of an outcast because both of her parents were Asari. Like, they can do that. It's just it's just discouraged.
Yes. Yeah. They're called purebloods when they're the product of two, you know, the connection between two Asari. And that is a bad thing. We also talk about their mating rituals, which is really forward to talk about on the first conversation.
Yeah.
But it's not like strictly a physical thing. They're psychics, right?
Yeah.
And it's a Star Trek. It's a mind meld. Yeah.
It's Spock. They're Imzadis, you know. We can talk to Garrus. He talks about how his father was also a cop, also in CSEC, and stopped him from becoming a Spectre because the Spectres have no accountability, but damn, they get results. So he was going to be a Spectre, but he didn't.
Right. Ashley, this is where she can express her spacism. She questions the wisdom of letting aliens aboard the ship. Specifically, she raises like, hey, Tali seems to be really interested in that engine. Like, is it so wise? And you can tell her, hey, cut that shit out. Like, are you questioning me?
There's a weird thing that feels weird with me in weird thing that feels weird. There's something in Mass Effect that clings with me generally across the whole thing. And it's the scale of time that people react emotionally with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll explain what I mean by that. So like Ashley's like, I don't know if we should have aliens on the ship. You know, yes, it's non-utopian. You know, it's not a Star Trek thing where like racism is just gone. Like, of course, there'd still be racism.
Mm-hmm.
But this can't be unusual for how like humanity is relatively new.
Yes.
To space travel.
Mm-hmm.
But they've accepted so many things at this point, you know, like in terms of just like, you know, wanting to be on this council, going and living in, the, you know, hanging out in the Citadel, all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley's racism feels weird to me.
Yeah.
As a thing, not because I think that we'd lose racism, but because it would be less basic than this.
Yeah.
Like just that it's so, everything is so zoomed out. Like, oh, is it wise to have aliens on the ship?
Mm-hmm.
This should be specific. She should be like, oh, you know, the thing about Krogans is they take our jobs or something, you know, bullshit like that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying don't got to hand it to racist, but it's really basic. And then that also plays with the extinction plot of this, where people are like, oh, a previous civilization died. That is a big deal. It's kind of, but it's such millennia of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's true of us now, you know, with like the extinction event on Earth. And we don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is this weird zoomed out macro, like playing as humanity.
Yeah.
As opposed, like you're playing a game of Age of Empires or Civilization that characters embody emotionally.
Yeah.
That I find reads really false.
Mm-hmm.
Like the threat is present, you know, this time. It's like, oh, it's extinction that's going to happen to them. I get that.
Yeah.
But even once we learn about the extinction, it's something that happens over the course of like 200 or 300 years, which is a timeline that humans do not conceptualize, as proven by right now.
Mm-hmm.
When we're on an extinction timeline that might last us 200 or 300 years, and we like the average human does not emotionally feel it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's only humanity at this point that is taking the threat seriously.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. It just reads as bad writing to me. It reads as like unhuman writing, like, and not unhuman human specifically to Mass Effect as opposed to other aliens, but just reads like an alien writing this, you know, it doesn't have emotional truth.
Yeah. Not to address criticism of this game with talking up another, but just to tell you the trajectory of the series. As the threat gets more imminent and as you stop being an arm specifically of humanity in the central government, like a little bit of that wonkiness goes away and it becomes a little bit more human-sized stakesy. A little bit. So, well, yeah, I think a lot of what you're feeling is, you know, this kind of metaphor that they are that they're talking where, like, you are playing as humanity, you know, specifically like this example, this trial balloon for humanity to be any kind of, you know, galactic mover and or shaker. Right.
But I think that ends up making individual characters feel and express things that feel false.
I agree with you.
like that is the idea, but that is an incredibly unrelatable situation that is hard to map onto other metaphorical feelings.
Yeah, so I'm not making an excuse for it. I'm just saying, like, here is a possible explanation for, like, why this wonkiness is here. It's because they lash themselves to this albatross of doing a pretty barely coded version of a War on Terror.
A zoomed out, just really, assuming more patriotism and pride than at least I have, but also less than I see in most media, even, not just like leftist sicko pinko media, but like general media.
You
don't end up with a lot of characters saying stuff like this, and acting like this. It's weird. It ends up feeling weird. And like one of the micro, it happens on a micro and macro level. Mm-hmm. It happens at the macro level with the main plot, and it happens with Ashley just being like, aliens, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And she should have much more, specificity is the soul of everything.
Yeah.
It's not just the soul of wit, but it also is what makes good writing, right? Like, you need detail.
Yeah.
And this game lacks it. It just doesn't do it a lot of the time.
Right.
It would feel less expository to the player and more lived in if she had more specific prejudices.
Yes.
And she just kind of doesn't. So I told her to cut it out too, because as much as you try, when you play a renegade, you can't just be a jerk. You have to be a racist.
Mm-hmm.
So it ended up being like, I said it in a renegade-y way.
Yeah.
But it was just like, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And she apologized.
Yeah.
Because you're everyone's boss.
I pretty much, I was like, hey, that sucks what you're saying. Yeah. But I think it always also comes down to, like, are you questioning your commanding officer? You can talk to Rex, and he has history with Saren. And, Rex actually left a job with him because he got a bad feeling. He was recruited to raid this ship. And Rex was like, hey, no, thank you. And then just, abandoned. Say like, hey, nothing like this.
Things could have been very different.
Yeah.
Tali talks about being homesick. She's in the engine room checking it out. The ship is too quiet compared to what she's used to.
Yeah, because the flotilla is made up of all of these, it's barely held together. It's a whole convoy that has to hold their civilization. And it is like scavenged ships held together with scavenged parts.
Yes.
And, this is like a city girl moving to the country. And Cricket's being a little bit more, not doing enough to replace the noise of traffic. Yeah.
Yep. We can also go and check in at the Citadel, if you like. I did not come back here very often.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things I did do. I think this first set of things I mostly did, and then the other ones I did not.
Yeah, this is basically like the only Citadel check-in that we have on here.
Gotcha.
If there's any follow-up on some of these, then I kind of included it in this.
Yeah.
If they are quest lines. Yeah.
The first person, again, leveraging your race to try to get you to do things, is when you land, Rear Admiral Mikhailovich shows up. He's waiting for you, and he inspects the ship. He's really upset that you have the ship. It's over-designed. You have aliens on board. He wants to get you in trouble, and I just told him to fuck off, and he fucked off. He said, you'll be hearing from this, and then nothing ever came.
I passed my checks to, address his concerns, but never saw any consequence off of that.
I don't know what would have happened.
Yeah. One of the things that clangs most about this, actually, is this next one, where when you're walking into the Citadel, there's a television journalist who comes up and does an interview with you, a journalist named Kalisa. And she wants to ask you questions about the operations that you're on, you know, talk about like your place on humanity's, you know, as humanity's representative, blah, blah, blah. And then like second guessing you. And you can succeed at this. Like you can, just pass your checks and not volunteer classified information and paint mm-hmm. a good picture. Or, and this is a thing that like at the time and even a little bit after, this was one of those TV tropes crowning moment of awesome. You can get impatient with her and then just punch a journalist.
Yeah. Why do they want to know? Some of their bit like
yeah.
Fake news.
Are you second guessing the military?
I defy anyone to understand the politics of this game. And, like, go to bat for the politics of Mass Effect.
Yeah.
It's so regressive. It is like the most conservative game we've played on the show. It's incredible. Like, no wonder this is huge with Gen Pop, because this probably made it with like conservo mm-hmm. people. Like this is a conservative game.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of outlook.
And then you can do it again, I think, in both of the sequels.
Yeah. Just so, keep punching this person. I think I just told him nothing, you know, no, and yeah. left. Like, I didn't get the punch scene. It would have been in character for my shepherd to punch because my shepherd's a jerk.
Uh-huh.
But I just didn't get there.
Yeah.
You know? I got this next... I remember also hearing about this journalism thing before playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people fucking love this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you could just punch somebody?
Oh, man. Punch a member of the Free Press? Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, why are they asking questions? Shut up. Let the military do its job. An Asari woman comes up to you named Nasana Dantias and wants to make a request. Their sister's been taken hostage by kidnappers who haven't returned her even after she paid the ransom.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do this. I just got the quest. I didn't do side quest in this. I didn't need the $50.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first side quest we're going to do where we go to just a facility full of pirates, you know, mass underscore effect underscore map 2 and clear out these pirates and then find that the lead slaver here was actually Nasana, was the sister that we were asked to find.
Okay.
And I think I killed her because she was a slaver. And you return and you find out like, oh, Nasana knew that her sister was a slaver. She was blackmailing her because Nasana was a member of the council. She purposefully, you know, lied by omission, didn't, you know, say exactly what her sister was in this situation in order to kill her. And if we died, then oh well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a man and woman arguing about gene therapy. This is also very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to this happens even in games I like a lot. This happens all the time in Human Revolution, for example, mm-hmm. of characters just having the central conflict. You know, you're like, here are the moral implications of the thing I want. Well, here are the moral implications of the thing I want. Just mm-hmm. presenting both sides of the sci-fi concept.
Yeah.
At you. just for the player.
And then the protagonist can serve as judge.
Yeah, exactly. Again, deeply artificial and gamey. It's whether their baby's going to have gene therapy.
Yes.
For her condition, it killed her husband and his brother.
Yes.
You know, she wants to do it. He doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Or she doesn't want to do it. He does want to do it.
Yeah. And it basically just boils down to like, oh, if we get the therapy, there's like a 5% chance that something could go wrong. But this congenital heart defect, you know, it has like a 20% chance of killing the child when they grow up. Right.
It's real. Vaccines cause autism. The argument.
Right.
You know, except
assuming that they.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't believe that vaccines cause autism.
No,
just for
no,
clarification.
No, no. Yeah. No, not even a little bit. But that's what, you know, that's what it reminded me of, except in this fiction. Yes. A man named Gareth wants us to look into his brother's trading ship, which dropped off the radar a while back. Again, I didn't do this. I didn't need the $50.
Yeah.
I went and picked up all these quests. I just didn't want to go do them because they were just corridor shoots.
Yeah, yeah.
So does anything cool happen with this?
No, you just go and find out that his brother died and then bring it back. Emily Wong, the good journalist, is chasing down a story about how overworked the air traffic control is in the Citadel, and wants us to plant a bug to get evidence of the bad working conditions. Mm-hmm. Playing Paragon, So that seems worth doing. Working conditions are good. So you go and place the bug. And then a little bit later on, you hear the news broadcast, and this is brought to light. So
I didn't find this lady. Mm-hmm. Didn't show up. I did have a human gang member come up who knows you from your Choose Your Own Adventure past, mm-hmm. whichever one you chose. They're like, I remember you from Atlanta Falcons. blackmails you to try to get somebody out of CSEC. You talk to him further. He's a human supremacist. He wants to get Turians killed by sabotaging medical supplies.
Yeah.
Which I also said no, because even though I'm a renegade, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Nothing happens as far as I can tell if you say no. He's like, you'll regret this.
Yeah.
But it's impotent.
Right. And then there's also a woman who asks us to get her sister Jenna out of this dangerous undercover job. Here she's working for CSEC, embedded in Cora's den, the CD bar down in the lower wards. And Jenna, the sister, she refuses our help. And this Turian pulls us aside and says, like, hey, you know, if you want to help me, we can close Jenna's case. He gave instructions about how to, like, make this weapons deal go down. I didn't follow them. I just, by just muscle memory, just selected the quadrant of the wheel that most fit the character I was trying to play instead of looking at the substance of what I was playing. And it's like, it's a cop, get him. And that turned into, it turned into a big shootout.
Just like the task that plays this, that just holds down the right button on all dialogue concerns.
Yep. Yeah. So maybe they shouldn't have trained me that all of the options were effectively just the same response, but colored in a different way.
Hate newspaper.
Mm.
Bring down this guy. This was the first side mission I did. This is the DLC I talked about. Did that anecdote last time.
Yeah.
Where you go, there's a meteor heading towards Terra Nova, New Earth. And a scientist being held by some Batarian hostages. They're doing this planet fall thing on them.
Yeah.
So you have to do this go do the three things. Mm-hmm. You go to the three little bases. Each time there are turrets.
Mm-hmm.
You take out the turrets. The second time there's mines. You go through and you kill all the guys inside the Mass Effect dot base.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually get to the terrorist leader. And the terrorist leader says, hey, let me go or I'm going to blow up. The scientist, I kill him because he's a terrorist leader. You got to break a few eggs.
Yeah.
This is the only time in the entire game I got a meaningful piece of treasure for a reward.
What'd you get?
When you do that, you can say to the scientist who survives, you can be like your tech tool, whatever mm-hmm. the,
you get a really good one from this. I got
You can
too.
Say that. Yeah. That's pretty good. I'd like to have it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I guess that's fine.
Nice watch you got there.
And it jumped the curve. Like it's the only time I got something that was better than the next thing I could buy.
Mm-hmm.
So notable just for that.
Yeah.
But in terms of gameplay, this is not or story stuff. Like it's cool that they're shooting a planet at a planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a cool idea, but it's not like the Batarians are that interesting.
Yeah.
At least in this game, I understand they're putting them here to set up for future games.
Yeah. This was meant to be like a bridge, between, the two a little bit. Batarians specifically come from the Terminus systems. They've been displaced out there. And Mass Effect 2 primarily concerns itself with the Terminus systems.
Yeah. So people paid for this.
Yes, they did.
Separately.
2007, wild times for DLC.
Absolutely, yeah, DLC. That weird in-between time between expansion packs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Throne of Baal had already come out. Like, we had real expansion packs, but then we had this weird little in-between stage with this stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Other side quests, you get a distress call from a ship that will take you to the scene of these biotic terrorists that are holding a corporate board member hostage. He specifically had voted against these reparations for the L2 biotics, the biotics that fucked up our boy Kaelin, or Kaden?
A file not found.
Yeah. Sorry. 404. Fucked up our boy 404.
Yeah.
And I press him saying like, hey, that was a really shitty thing to do. Like maybe if we leave you alive, can you spearhead like setting things right for these people? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's how that resolved for me.
Yeah. Did not do this one. I didn't do side quests in this. I did the Thresher maw thing on accident.
Yeah.
When I was still poking around for side quests. People said to do this this rogue AI one.
Yeah.
There's a virtual intelligence that's gone rogue on Earth's moon, and you go destroy its drone and its cores because you get the ability to choose a subclass.
Yeah.
I meant to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like somebody said to do it, and then I stopped playing for a day or two and then forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
When I sat back down to play it and just ended up playing through the rest of the game and forgot. Like, I wasn't purposely omitting this.
Mm-hmm.
I just forgot it was a notable side quest with a mechanical thing.
Yes.
Talk to me about specialized subclasses for Shepard.
Yeah. So, these are based on which base class you choose, and they just specialize you into one aspect or the other. So I think for Vanguard, it was like, do you want to take less damage or do you, or it was like, do you want to focus on the biotic side of your power set? Or do you want to focus on the, guns side of your, of your power set? Is what it is. It's not necessarily special abilities. It's more just, it changes the skill, that is your class and, the effect that it has on your overall stats. It'd be cool if this was, you know, like a, you know, class up like in Final Fantasy One or whatever. It's just not
like a prestige class.
Yeah.
I wonder what it'd be, because I chose the pure biotics class. I wonder what my choices would have been.
I don't know. I hadn't looked at them. It might be like, do you want to be like a throw specialist, or do you want to be a warp specialist or something like that?
Do I want to move things slightly over or hold them slightly in place? Which one do I want to do better? Which crowd control thing do you want to do better?
This is a hard mission too. Like, generally the difficulty curve in this game is real. You know, they're just kind of making it as smooth as possible. If you try to go and do this one early, you're probably going to be wrecked. Just because of how difficultly it is tuned, and there is no indication that is the case.
Gotcha. The one I did do, at least the beginning of it, I got a distress signal, and we go there, and it's a mimic. It's an anglerfish.
Mm-hmm.
There's an alliance beacon that was set up to lure troops, and then there's a thresher maw, which is a big sandworm. Thing. Which I took out, which was apparently another change they made in the Legendary Edition.
Mm-hmm.
The Thresher Maw in this new one, you can see where it's at when it's underground.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, you couldn't.
Yeah.
So it would pop up under the Mako and auto-kill you.
Yeah.
If it pops up under the Mako now, it also auto-kills you, but it's really easy to avoid.
Super easy to stay out of its way.
Yeah.
What they didn't change is the fact that it is just a gigantic HP sponge that is not very interesting to fight.
No, you circle strafe it for a very long time.
Right. Yeah. You take this news back to an admiral saying like, hey, we found some of your men, this distress beacon, you know, this was a trap. It was a setup. And he sends a transmission later saying that the culprits are this human supremacist group called Cerberus. It's a former like deniable ops, alliance group that had broken off, and, you know, specifically became terrorists. Cerberus is the organization that you are pressed into serving in the second one.
Oh, got you.
Yes. You don't actually like, you're not doing basically,
you don't it's do terrorism.
Like, yeah, you don't do terrorist stuff. Yeah.
Do you get a Thresher Maw?
No.
Teammate.
No, you do not.
You should 100% get an entire floor of the Normandy dedicated to a Thresher Maw in a tank that you go and check in on, and eventually you get to have a sex scene with it.
Yeah. The codex in this game, by and large, like, I listened to all of it as a mm-hmm. podcast back in 2007 before, you know, podcasts were really that much of a thing for me. Mm-hmm. I, you know, listened to all of it. The codex entry for the Thresher Mauls is kind of cool, describing their life cycle and just all it takes is this little spore to arrive, and they grow up and then just obliterate a planet. It's kind of like it's a little bit like a what's the gigantic, like a bullet or whatever.
Yeah, like a bullet. It, by virtue of being a different monster,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not like a good fight, but it wasn't the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I fought it in the Mako. Like, anything that isn't corridor shooting against guys with guns,
yeah,
I like a little bit more in this game just because that is such the baseline.
Yes.
My least favorite planet is this next one, mm-hmm. Pharos, mechanically.
Yeah.
Here.
Story stuff here is cool.
The story stuff is A-okay. It's fine. Mechanically, I think this is the low point for the game,
mm-hmm.
Personally for me.
Because it's impossible to navigate.
It's really hard to navigate. The way that the end boss fight runs in this is really odious to me.
Yeah.
So you go to Pharos, is another one of our leads, and someone on the dock says the colony leader wants to speak to us about preparing for the next Geth attack. Mm-hmm. And then Geth attack while you're there.
Yeah.
This fucking looks like Stargate. Like, no area has looked more like fucking, like, this whole game has a lot of Stargate vibes.
Yeah.
The final planet you go to has a lot of Stargate vibes as well. This mm-hmm. is Stargate as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what this is, it's like a big desert planet that the Protheans have like built these elevated cities onto.
Yes.
So you're like walking around on these bridges and spires, is what they are. And this place where we have landed is it's a colony called Zoo's Hope. It's a colony that has 16 people that live in it, which does not seem like enough people to actually
to repopulate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So we deal with all the Geth in this initial attack, and we go and talk to the leader, Phi Don. Yes. And he talks about like, oh, things were so peaceful before the Geth attack.
Yes. The colony is owned by Exogeny, a company. You know, if it's a company and a sci-fi thing, they're evil.
Yes.
Everybody works there for them. They dig up artifacts. And you go and talk to the people in charge of the systems here, and everyone's acting a little bit weird.
Yeah.
They won't answer questions about the colony. They get really evasive.
Yeah. They defer, like, hey, you should talk to Phi Don about that.
Yeah. You fight across this skyway towards the Exogeny headquarters. This is where the Geth are based there. And on the way, we run into a colonist. He says, hey, can you rescue my daughter, Lisbeth, mm-hmm. On the way?
Yeah.
It's a sci-fi name because they took off the first letter. the navigation here is worth talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like once you get it, you get it. But there are all these switchbacks, and this is where the map's lack of verticality becomes a real problem.
Yeah.
In this, it gets lots of dead ends as well. Like, this has huge console RPG dungeon feel. Like, these feel like Phantasy Star 2 maps to me. Just like dead ends.
Mm-hmm. And also else. like you switch to different submaps for kind of different floors,
yes.
but kind of not. Like the actual, you know, map that you look at when you go into your inventory or go into your menu, is really zoomed in. So like getting your orientation and figuring out, okay, so I need to go north, but you know, north quote unquote involves a lot of up and down that is not communicated
yes.
on either the, you know, mini map, which is not a mini map. It's just a radar for enemies.
Or in the actual map.
Yeah.
What it does the first time you're playing through it, it reduces you down to the video game heuristic of there is bad signaling, so I'm just going to go where there are bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, that happens in every video game. But eventually you'll clear out those bad guys and still be lost. Yeah. Or at least for me. You know, maybe mm-hmm. I'm an idiot, but like that kept happening to me.
No, I ran into this as well. Yeah.
You eventually find Lisbeth after you drop down a level.
Mm-hmm.
And she lets it slip what Exogeny found here. And this is what the Geth are coming after. This plant called the Thorian.
Yes.
This 1,000-year-old plant.
Yes. So she says, like, hey, you know, go and find a way for us to get out of this tower. And we go in and we talk to a VI. We talk to this hologram that will give us a little bit more information because we have Lisbeth's credentials. She gave them yes. to us. The Thorian is not just one plant. It's this massive network of plants that infects people with spores and effectively enslaves them. It makes it so that doing anything to disobey or question it, even in thought, is incredibly painful.
Yes.
And Exogeny, this corporation, they intentionally infected the people of Zoo's Hope in order to determine the plant's capabilities.
Yeah. Every corporation in a sci-fi thing is Weyland-Yutani.
Yes.
Like for eternity.
You don't gotta ever want to subvert this. But yeah.
Yeah. If you ever wanted to subvert this, you'd have a corporation that wasn't using science for evil.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the biggest twist in sci-fi history. People would revolt. People would quit the game. So we're trapped in this portion of the tunnel by these energy shields. They're powered by the Geth ship that's docked to the side of the tower. We have to dislodge the thing, the little spikes mm-hmm. of the Geth when they latch onto it. And you do this by setting the pressure control on a door mm-hmm. in the correct range. You read a little note that says, like, if you don't have this exactly right, it comes down with enough force to shear off somebody's arm.
No.
You know, make sure you do it right. You set it with that bad amount of force and it cuts off the arm.
Yeah. And it's just the standard, like, here are a bunch of switches, pressing it up raises it by something, pressing it down lowers it by something. And then you just have to enter the combination.
Yes.
Really basic video game puzzle.
when the shields are down, Joker says, hey, the colonists are attacking the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I just told him to set tight and protect the ship. I don't know what the fuck they think. I just imagine a bunch of guys running up against a closed door. You know, I don't know what that means. It's a ship. It's got shields and stuff. It does space combat. You're just guys. You know, I don't know if any consequence can come from this.
Right.
Yeah.
So we confront Lisbeth, you know, about what she knew, and she cops to it. But the reason that she stayed behind and got stuck was because she was trying to send out word about where the Thorian was located. It's directly under Zoo's Hope, conveniently enough. Yes. She was trying to get people help because Exogeny was trying to contain this.
Yes. So we stop by the refugee camp and find the Exogeny executive trying to shut everything down.
Mm-hmm.
He hoped that Geth would kill you.
Yeah.
And you can kind of manage to talk him down or yell at him until he stops.
Yeah. This is actually, I have it wrong in the notes here. I tried to talk him down. This is the toughest persuasion check in the game. It kind of bugged out to where, like, it should... I failed it. He didn't attack. It just, after the conversation was gone, he was dead. And Lisbeth's mom was like, oh, we're not going to get anywhere if we're just shooting each other. So like, I failed it, but it didn't turn into a firefight. His head just did that.
Oh, you just shot him like without knowing you did it. You did some Dark Urge Baldur's Gate 3 shit.
It'd be nice
to shoot this guy. Oh shit.
I don't even know if I did the shooting. I think it was just like this real missing from the film kind of thing. Yeah, it was real weird.
Caden did it. And he just know nobody would notice him. So he's got invisible monsters.
The most successful secret agent of all time. Yeah.
Just, we can't remember his name, but if we did, we'd get him. I had been putting a lot of points into intimidate at this point. So I'm pretty sure I did talk him down. At this point, I don't remember exactly. I know I didn't fight him.
Yeah.
He was still around. So mm-hmm. this is a tough intimidate thing. I had the stats for it.
Yeah.
Lisbeth's mom suggests that we deal with the infected colonist with these nerve gas grenades.
Yeah.
It's very funny. You just get a mod for all of your grenades that you then put on that turns them into nerve gas grenades. And then all of a sudden the game gets very generous with grenades. You find like two caches of them on the way back where they're the rarest item in the galaxy up until that point.
Yeah.
I ended up saving them. Like I was a renegade, but I wasn't like kill these innocent people. Like, you know, it's an orthogonal alignment access
to
good and evil in a way that is sometimes an awkward fit.
Mm-hmm.
You get Paragon points for saving them, but it wouldn't be very renegade just to kill people for no reason.
Right.
You know, I don't understand why that's a renegade Paragon choice.
Yes.
You know, when that's a much more traditional good and evil choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of complicates this is the fact that the regular humans who are attacking you are mixed in with this new enemy, which are just reskinned Geth husks. These things called Thorian creepers is what they are.
These had hilarious AI. They just spent a lot of time doing like the thriller dance, like walking back and forth in front of me. They also introduce right around here. It might be like a couple points later. I don't know if you have a note of it. But they do something that's very Dirty Pool with these guys, where they have them spawn in, but they're not vulnerable until they stand up.
Yeah.
That is so deeply gamey and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it.
Yeah.
It's just really, really, you know, you walk into a door and you have to kill everybody before you can leave.
Yeah.
You know, Robotron shit or something. Like, I really hate it.
Yeah. So it's just like, I'm walking in, so I have to walk past these things and start an encounter. I can't like deal with them. You know, I don't get anything for having noticed them on the way into this room.
Well, they're not hard to notice. It's just an artificial way to set up a pincer attack.
Mm-hmm.
Like they want to have the encounter design of a pincer attack, but the only way they can think of doing it is making these things immune to grenades and shotguns for no discernible reason. Like they're not, if they had like a little plant shell around them and the bullets bounced off, they just look like they're taking a knee though.
Yeah. They look like they're having a tornado drill at a school.
Yeah. Like they're just duck and covering and you should be able to shoot them, but you just have to wait for an arbitrary point where they stand up to shoot them. It's also, there are hundreds of them.
There's so many.
This is the most enemy spammy they get until the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like I hate this chapter mechanically so much.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating. They're wonky grenade physics. Like you're trying to use those to save the colonist.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're giving you tons of grenades, you could very easily run out in this because of how weird your grenade arc is and how enemies just walk back and forth a lot.
Yeah.
There's an AOE on the grenades, on the nerve gas grenades, but it's not, it doesn't feel consistent to me. I don't know. Like this doesn't work.
No.
To me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you kill the creepers, use the gas on the humans. When you get there, Phaidon confronts you when you're using the crane to lift this freighter to make your way into the Thorian den. And he's struggling with himself. He's, you know, trying to find the real him in the mind control. The Thorian tries to make him shoot you, but he shoots himself instead.
Right.
And I shed a tear. You go down and find the main Thorian bulb, this big slimy plant thing that you talk to.
And it spews out this Asari clone and addresses us through her. This green Asari. And she says, you know, you are within and before the Thorian. It commands you to be in all. And, you know, it is pissed at us and pissed at mortals in general because of Saren. Saren had come here for information about the Protheans, got the information, and then betrayed the Thorian by sending the Geth after it to destroy it.
Yeah.
So it attacks us, thinking that we're no different than him.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a way to talk your way out of this.
There isn't, no.
Okay. Like, I wouldn't have suffered this thing to live. This is a really bad boss fight.
Yeah.
This reminds me of a Remedy boss fight. Remedy games, like, when you can't design a boss and you just make somebody go through a level shooting guys. You have to shoot so many of these fucking bulbs.
Yep.
A bunch of the bulbs you can spot from where you're at, but you can't shoot them.
Yeah.
Until you get up to the landing where it's appropriate. And it is nonstop the Thorian clones, the creepers, like that little bit. So you walk into a room, there's three of them taking a knee. You have to go past them, you know, 20 feet. Then they come to life at the same time new ones come down the stairs. This happens like six times.
Yeah. And it keeps spitting out new clones of that Asari to like do biotic stuff.
Yeah. It's kind of a boss fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it still goes down pretty easy.
Yeah.
The thing with the Thorian creepers that's annoying is they have a poison attack. So it bypasses your shields.
Yeah.
This boss fight sucks the stars from the sky.
Yeah.
Like I hate this.
Mm-hmm.
You eventually kill the Thorian.
Yes.
And it spits out the original clone, an Asari named Shiala.
Right. She was a servant of Matriarch Benezia. And, you know, says like, yeah, she didn't start bad. She had joined Saren to try and steer him down a gentler path. But then Saren corrupted her, which is a mighty feat because, you know, Asari Matriarch should be one of the most powerful beings in the galaxy.
Yes. And this is where I think you start, I think they use the term for it. I can't remember what it's called.
Indoctrination.
Indoctrination.
Yes.
I think that she mentioned it here. This is the first time the proper noun comes up. That Saren can actually like change your mind.
Yeah. Being, around Saren and inside his ship specifically, indoctrinates people. You know, it, you know, makes Saren's ideas seem reasonable, and slowly over the course of being exposed to it, it makes you more and more supplicant.
Yes.
You know, and Shiala, you know, she was brought here to serve as this conduit between Saren and the Thorian due to her biotics, right? You know, we saw that with the Thorian speaking through her.
Yeah. So the Thorian has been all around since at least as long as the Protheans. And it has their genetic memory from eating some of them.
Yeah.
So this is called the cipher, this thing it can do. And she does a mind meld. You open your mind and she transfers the cipher to you. And you get a slightly extended cut of the video.
Right.
That you had the vision before. This time you see the Reaper.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have total sense over it, but it's a little bit more clear.
Right. I let her live. She comes back and ends up being important later on. She will specifically ally with you and help you out if you had saved the people of Zeus Hope.
Yes.
If you do let her live, she stays behind on the colony to help them set things right.
Is there any advantage ever of killing something in the trilogy?
It is hard for me to say.
Or is it always just a thing where like you make the choice to show mercy or destroy something. If you show mercy every single time, you get another bit of build points for the third game.
I think that there are some people who can end up working against you, but don't quote me on that.
Okay. Because it felt like I had read about this. I read about the Rachni thing, how that gives you more build points for Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
Basically. And if the choice is always just, you should just spare the thing because it will save you, it's not very much of a choice.
Yeah.
you know, and the only reason why I bring that up, like, video game choice is a fraught thing, but the thing this game is known for is that reactivity, like two sequels down the road.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not calling it out for this because I don't know if it works both ways. It should work both ways.
It should.
Like, it is respectable as a thing if you do not know the consequences now.
Yeah.
You know.
I think just generally more people play Paragon. So that is the, you know, that is the way that, you know, the story comes out. Like, oh, if you save the Rachni, then they come back, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I think there's a good argument for killing the Rachni. I killed the fucking Rachni. They try to kill me.
It's the most evil thing you can do in the game.
They're evil. Yeah. they're evil monster bugs. Uh-huh. They try to kill people and they're easily decrypt.
True.
Know, somebody's going to use them as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They don't seem sentient to me.
they're singing songs, Gary. That is your exact metric for determining whether something is sentient.
Yeah, but do they sing songs? Do they really? They're bad songs. I don't know. I won't eat an octopus, but I'll kill off a fake video game bug. I think I let her live as well. She was gonna make amends.
Mm-hmm.
Our colony. Back on the ship, Liara says, like, hey, can we mind meld?
Yeah.
And I'm going to use my knowledge of the Protheans to interpret the cipher.
Yeah. Doesn't work. It just overwhelms her because her mind is not as great as yours, Shepherd, Space Jesus.
Exactly. One of the funniest dialogue choices in the game is here, where you can be like, didn't seem to bug me that much. I never did it.
I'm just built different.
Yeah. You can literally just say that, though. Of course, the council is mad that you destroyed the Thorian.
Of course.
Because they wanted to study it for evil purposes.
Yeah. And afterward, the Salarian and Asari counselors, they contact you, say, hey, now that Turian jerks away, they say, like, hey, there's some spy chatter around Saren having some kind of activity on the planet Vermeier. So this gives you a third planet to go check out if you want to.
Yeah. A fourth planet, because we have Novaria.
Yes, true.
As well. Like, it's the final, you know, it gives us the run-up till the end.
Yes.
We have a little crew check-in at this point as well, where we can talk to everybody. Liara talks about how the rest of the species see humanity as kind of a bully.
Yeah.
But she likes that we get results. Fuck.
It is the only axis that people are judged on.
It's such a cop game. It is the most cop game that's ever been.
Yeah. Like,
how is this big for so many leftists? The file not found talks about how he's trying to get his cousin in the agriculture business to send shipments to Pharos.
Yeah, he's got a
cool story, bro.
He's got a cousin who's a big wheel down at the cracker factory.
Yeah. he tells us about a blue car he once saw.
Garrus has a side quest for us. You know, we learned a little bit more about why he's jaded about C-Sec and they're in action. He says, like, hey, there was this case when we were at the Citadel. There was this guy, this doctor.
This is cool.
Yeah.
Like, just throwing this out there. This is a cool idea.
Yeah. There was this doctor who was hacking people up and selling their body parts, to basically being like a chop shop, organ harvester guy.
Cooler than that, he was growing artificial organs inside people.
Yes.
So it's like that, the God Gas Venture Brothers thing where it like makes a new liver, but it just keeps making livers. I killed so many mice. I'm so sick of killing mice. So the idea is that people who are really poor would sign up to be an incubator for these things. Like, this is good storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked this idea, you know? And he's just like, yeah, I never got him. Mm-hmm. You know, the red tape got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, fuck yeah, man, let's ride. Let's go get him.
Yeah.
So he gives you the transponder and we can kill that motherfucker.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yep. So you go to Mass Effect Base 1 dot level and shoot through his folks and get to him. And this is where you can shape Garrus's kind of character. You can like either so the doctor that we find here, he says that he's somebody else. Like, hey, you've got the wrong guy. I definitely didn't change my name and start operating the same, you know, doing the same operation just elsewhere. You can, you know, get Garrus, say like, hey, you know, we need to take him in. Like, we've got him dead to rights. Don't just shoot him. If you convince him of that, the doctor betrays us and, you know, attacks anyway. But, you know, you have convinced Garrus that it is not always the best thing to do to shoot immediately.
Yeah. Do you want to do due process or not?
Right.
Do you want to do, you know, Han shooting first or Greedo shooting first?
Right.
You know, as a thing. This guy's got to go. He's growing organs inside people. Mm-hmm. So he got shot. Ashley talks about her family growing up, you know, growing up raising her sisters because her dad was always off on deployment. Mm-hmm. The beginning of racism origins. Rex talks about how his father betrayed him because of a disagreement about how their tribe should proceed after the war with the Turians.
Right.
This begins to start his loyalty quest.
Yeah.
His side quest.
I didn't get this, which is weird because I was actually doing stuff.
He wants you to go get his ancestral armor for that. It's just a Mass Effect mission.
Yeah.
When you go do it, like, but that's his loyalty quest, which I did because I like Rex.
Yeah. So like the disagreement was, Rex wanted to focus on breeding, you know, saying like, hey, why would we ship all of our young men out, just to die to make a little bit of money when we should be trying to figure out a way to recover from this horrible genocide?
Yeah, we have to repopulate.
Yeah. And his dad wanted to kind of continue the old warrior ways. Right.
Yes.
And this, you know, it ended with him, with Rex killing his dad.
Yes.
And then leaving. Yeah.
Yep. And then you go get the armor from the guy who has it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you can also talk to who's next here. Sorry,
Tali.
I lost my place. Tali. Tali talks about how she needs to bring something back from her pilgrimage. When you go on your pilgrimage, you have to bring back some kind of treasure.
Yeah.
Something that will shed light on the Geth.
Mm-hmm.
And her father is on the Admiralty Board, which makes her Quarian royalty.
Right.
She's a pretty big wheel down at the flotilla factory.
Yeah. Down at the refugee factory. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
No. So the third spoke is Novaria. Here, the frozen world. This was very funny. Every time I was here, no matter what was going on, this is where my companions would just be like, I don't like the cold.
Mm-hmm.
Every time, no matter what just happened.
Yeah.
They just talked about the weather.
whenever I am here, I speak along with the dialogue doing the Star Fox. Because I think Novaria is a planet from Star
it
Fox.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There should be a sim filter for this game. Everyone speaks Simlish. So you arrive on, this is a frozen world. It's got mm-hmm. heightened security, and this is a libertarian paradise.
Yeah.
Tax shelter for businesses.
It's a libertopia. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They don't want to let us on the planet with weapons. But we get to keep them because we're just that badass, because we're going to get results. We're the Spectre. Mm-hmm. We're Jack Bauer.
Yes.
And we learn from the administrators, Crooked, that the head admin, Anolius, that Benezia is out at the Peak 15 Research Center with a bunch of her commandos.
Yeah.
They won't give us a pass.
With a bunch of crates. Yeah.
Yeah. He won't give us a pass.
Yeah.
So we had to find another way. He's corrupt.
Yes. Specifically won't give us a pass to get to the hangar so we can proceed.
Yes.
So we got to find a way around Anolius, who is obstructing us. Yes. So we can talk to people, get a couple of leads. The way that I did this, there's this Turian named Lorik Quinn who has a pass, but he is trying to reveal the corruption reveal the corruption that Anolius is involved in.
Yes.
Specifically, like, putting the corporations here in danger because he's on the take.
Yes, his store is being ransacked for evidence, so we have to go interrupt his store being ransacked.
Yeah.
Kill all the corrupt cops. Gianna, the assistant of the corrupt cops, shows up and says, like, hey, don't take the evidence to Lorik. You know, she's working for Novaria's internal affairs.
Yeah.
For this. Not the corrupt cop. This is his secretary who's working for the internal affairs, or is in the desk outside of his office.
Yeah. So Gianna is Anolaus's assistant, and she's embedded there because she's part of Novaria internal affairs.
Matsuo is the corrupt cop.
Yes.
Maika Matsuo.
Yes.
Yeah. So she's doing this, so she's going to arrest him.
Mm-hmm.
She says, hey, convince Lorik to give her the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did, and it gives you Paragon points. The other thing you can do is just get the pass, I guess, which again doesn't feel like a Paragon Renegade thing. and this gets you into the garage.
Right. So, and we can ride again through more tribes canyons.
Yes.
God, I'd really need to find so how many people today have actually fucking played Tribes back in the day?
Few.
Very few.
There's a lot of PS3 and that era of PC level video games as reference. It is, you just got to find like a more common one.
I do, but it just,
it's a very common video game thing though.
Yeah. But just anonymous hills, right?
Yes.
Just like, oh, we figured out how to tessellate these polygons to make featureless hills. Yeah.
Yes.
But we, you know, we ride through, we deal with the Geth there until we reach the Peak 15 facility where Benezia is.
Yes.
And it's on lockdown because of this biological containment breach. This is hilarious because it's supposed to be a mystery what you're fighting.
Yes.
These big bugs. It's treated as a reveal later, despite the fact that when you are targeting them, you get the name of the thing that you're targeting. And these are the Rakdai. You have heard about this, like specifically, like this is involved in the history of the Krogan. The Rakdai are these big old Zerg bugs that once threatened all of galactic civilization until they were put down and thought to be extinct.
In order to get into the reactor, you have to do three things here. We're in another three things thing. Mm-hmm. In the most BioWare move imaginable, you have to play Towers of Hanoi unless you want to spend a resource to skip their gameplay. which I just went and played Towers of Hanoi because, again, it wasn't corridor shooting.
Right.
Like, if I'm not corridor shooting in this game, I'm, you know, refreshed from novelty.
Mm-hmm.
This gets the virtual intelligence interface back online.
Right.
Then you have to activate two more systems. To open up the tram, they'll take you to the Rift Station where Benezia is.
Yeah. There are people hauled up here, people from the labs who are just under siege. The security has been up for
this
like
is a hub. This is a town.
Yeah.
There's
a
shopkeeper here and a doctor. Mm-hmm. It's real weird. They just put a town halfway through this planet.
Yeah. But you talk to the security captain who's, you know, hiding in the bunks, saying like, yeah, she's down in the hot labs. The hot labs, because it's built into the side of this glacier. There was this failsafe that was supposed to happen where the lab gets really hot and then sinks into the glacier. But that didn't work. And so now what they were researching, these big old bugs, they're everywhere.
Yep. Bugs, are they gross? Only through science will we determine. There's one survivor of that hot labs incident, this Volus scientist named Han Ular.
Mm-hmm.
We found the aliens are fighting the Rakdai, thought to be extinct from the Rakdai War. However, they found an egg on a derelict ship and hatched it.
Yeah. Always a great thing to do in sci-fi.
Yeah. Wonderful. We helped some scientists get a cure for a bioweapon toxin from the lab.
Mm-hmm.
One of Benezia's agents shows up and tries to kill you here. The doctor who sent you for the cure gives you a pass so you can get further into it. You just kind of do video game shit until you can get up to Benezia.
Yeah.
The biggest titty, you know, matriarch in the world.
Yes.
Benezia has Lulu tits from mm-hmm. Final Fantasy X.
Yes.
Like absolutely like breast reduction, back pain tits.
Yeah. Just on display. Just a shelf. And we find her and she's in this, you know, big donut shaped lab, and standing next to a tank with a bigger bug in it. And is ranting about, you know, motherhood, and how they're going to control the Rakdai's offspring. And then she attacks and it starts this boss encounter. Benezia is, bubbled up. She's in her shield. We have to fight her, Asari commandos. In waves enough to weaken this shield and then go up and then deal damage to her until she shields up again and then kill the enemies.
Another very Remedy boss fight.
Yes.
Once you do this, eventually she becomes herself again. She talks about this power of Saren, you know, and the Sovereign's indoctrination.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm myself for now, but I won't be for very long.
Right.
She came here to find something called the Mu Relay, which was blown out of its system when a star went supernova.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, these Mass Effect relays, which are the nodes of the nodes of intergalactic like fast travel, faster than light travel. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, she gives us so we know what Saren is looking for is this location, but we don't know where he's trying to go with it. There are multiple places that you can go from each of these. Then she loses control, and then we attack her again, and this is just real fast. It's 3 against 1. She's got the biotics, but. You get the jump on her. It's fine.
Yeah. You shoot her. She manages to become herself again before she dies. If you brought Liara with you, they talk.
Yeah.
Then we can talk to the Rakdai Queen, who is in an acid chamber. Because all the aliens in here possess another alien to talk to us, specifically an Asari.
Yeah.
This one, like the plant, brings up an Asari commando to get up and talk towards you. Takajou. Explains, you know, the Rachni that we've encountered were the bad ones.
Yeah.
They've gone crazy because they're separated from her song.
Right.
They should be killed because they can only cause harm.
Yeah.
But she says, hey, let me go. Yeah. I'm going to take my, my clutch and start somewhere new. I'll remember your mercy. Right. And I flushed that turd. I absolutely said goodbye to that big pile of diarrhea. It's an evil space debug. It's got to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Everybody's horrified when you do it.
Yeah. Liara didn't like it, but the other person I had with me liked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember who it was, but they were into it.
Yeah.
They're just like, hell yeah. And I'm like, man, that's, I don't know, space bug.
Can I drink the juice afterward?
Yeah, it seemed like something in an evil space bug. You know, I didn't trust the evil space bug. They'd started all the wars before.
Uh-huh.
You know, she says that she'll do this thing, but why should I believe her?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I decided to let her go. But we still have all these Rachni around. It's still super dangerous. To clear the labs, we need to initiate this neutron purge with authorization codes from the scientist who dies right in front of you.
Yeah.
And then we get back to the council where the council is either furious that you let them live, or they'll be furious that you killed them.
Yeah, exactly. Exact same reaction. They were very mad that I killed the Rachni.
Yeah.
We can do another crew check-in here. Liara talks about how Benezia wasn't really herself in the end, but she chose her path, and Liara will try to do better.
Yeah.
Good for her. You won't be the second in command of the most evil, planner in the universe. Good for you. File not found. Mr. Headache talks about his biotic training still.
Mm-hmm.
He killed his instructor for hitting another trainee.
Mm-hmm.
There, who is mad because it was very abusive. He also says that he would have left the decision to the Rachni up to the council.
Yeah.
You know,
not making a good case for yourself, buddy.
Yeah. No. Stand up for yourself, man.
Yeah. Specifically because humanity wasn't on the scene when the Rachni war happened. He was like, we have no idea. Yeah. We really don't have any stakes in this.
Murder bugs. Do they kill? We weren't there. We don't know.
News at 11.
Yeah.
Garrus worries that the council is still protecting Saren, keeping him away from us. He's still suspicious of that. And Ashley gives kind of her backstory here. She talks about how she comes from this family. Her grandfather was a disgrace to humanity because he is the only human to have surrendered to an alien race during this first contact war. After humanity, discovered the mass relay and made their first jump and ran into the Turians, this started this, brief but very intense conflict. And he surrendered specifically to save his garrison. They were under siege for a very long time. Handed that over. And so, like, at the Williams name, like, goes down in history with Benedict Arnold and Neville Chamberlain.
Yeah, Quisling.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And that's why she doesn't like aliens.
Right.
The final spoke we have that will lead us into the end game is Vermeier,
mm-hmm.
A tropical planet where we go. This is where the Salarians, the nerd aliens, are at war with the Geth.
Right.
Yeah.
They have spotted a whole bunch of Geth activity. We need to go and link up with them because they've lost contact and figure out what's going on.
Yes.
So we land and we're driving this Mako down a canyon, always with the canyons. Having to get out occasionally to open up
outdoor
these gates.
Hallways.
Yeah.
Like a nonstop outdoor hallway.
And ultimately we take out this artillery cannon, this anti-air cannon, so that the Normandy can make its can land at the Salarian camp.
Yep. When we get here, the Salarian captain says that Saren's base is on Vermeier. He's engineered a cure for the genophage.
Mm-hmm.
So he's breeding a Krogan army.
Yeah.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
Rex freaks out and is like, I don't want to do this. You know, this is our people's only chance. And this is where you can lose Rex.
Yes.
He wants to, not fight Saren because Saren's going to bring his species back.
Right.
It's a skill check here. We say a skill check. These are, as far as I can tell, are thresholds, not percentage chances. So if you have leveled up your whatever persuasion skill, again, it's not very much of a role-playing game. Either persuasion skill works and gets the same results.
Mm-hmm.
You just choose which flavor you want.
Yeah.
We'll convince him to stand down.
Yes.
You know, be like, those Krogan are nothing but slaves. To Saren, you would, but as well, let's find a different way.
Yeah. That's
The other thing you can do is shoot him. I didn't shoot him because I like Rex. Mm-hmm. Got him to stand down.
Yeah. Specifically, Ashley has a bead on him. If he, you know, starts to fight, you can issue the command for her to snipe him. Yeah.
I had an option to shoot him myself as well.
Oh.
In my dialogue. It might be a renegade thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did not do.
Right. And if you talk him down, everybody is super impressed. Like, oh, I didn't think anybody was going to reason. You're the first human to reason with a Krogan.
Yeah. Like, God, everyone's racist, even when they're not trying to be racist in this. So the plan is the nerd aliens, the Salarians, are going to make a frontal assault while we send in like a spec ops team.
Yes.
And one of our humans is going to stay with the Salarian, and one of them is going to come with us.
Right.
Here. This is where the mechanical issue with this of your party composition being, you know, not determined, but influenced by your class choice
mm-hmm.
came in.
Yeah.
So I took Ashley with me because I wanted a pure warrior and I was a pure biotic.
Yes.
Having Caden with me was not very useful.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mention in the last one, but when we were in, the last planet in Novaria, having Liara with me, that was the hardest the combat ever got for me mm-hmm. because I had two full biotics and the AI biotics are bad.
Oh, yeah.
The AI is better at doing shooting.
Yes.
Than this. So I take Ashley with me and leave Caden, thankfully mm-hmm. sealing his fate.
This doesn't seal the fate. It just determines which one is available to you. It is a choice later.
Gotcha.
It's basically this determines which direction you have to go to save the person that you want to save.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I leave Caden there. Mm-hmm. Take Ashley with me.
Yeah. Before you head out, you get this famous scene. It's this big rousing speech that the captain, the Salarian leader here, Captain Karahi gives, talking about, talking to his men, the Salarians, about all these past conflicts. And, in the past, we held the line, and today we're going to hold the line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels one-to-one ripped off from, like, Patton or something to me. We close the distance on the base on foot, dealing with these little computers that we disable and stuff that'll make things easier for the other teams.
It's like side objectives that you do that determine whether or not Karahi and the Salarians live.
Yeah. And they're right on the way. There's no reason not to do them.
Yeah.
Inside the base, we run into Salarians that are inside jail cells that are indoctrinated.
Yeah. There's one who is not indoctrinated, who was taken prisoner. Basically we can just let him out and say, hey, you better start running. It was like, pick a direction and go. Cause we got nukes.
We're gonna blow this up.
Yeah.
We're gonna nuke this up.
Mm-hmm.
We find an Asari, a neurologist who wants to leave the lab. And she talks about indoctrination. It's not just for prisoners. It's happening to her and she wants out. We know it's not just for prisoners.
Yeah.
Like they're really underlying this indoctrination thing.
Yeah.
Multiple forms of just mind control happening in this,
mm-hmm.
this game.
Yeah.
She
was here studying this indoctrination effect, at the direction of Saren. And we learn that this isn't something Saren controls. And she's worried that it is starting to work on and sway him. I let her run off. Seems to have changed her ways. And she lets us into Saren's private lab, where we get a very meaningful scene here.
Yes. Another Prothean beacon, glowing green. We touch it, we get the rest of her vision.
Yeah. Like all the holes are filled in. Yeah.
Yeah. It still doesn't make a lot of literal sense as a thing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Narratively, it's the complete picture.
Yes.
But when we leave, this big red glowing hologram shows up of the Sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Venture Brothers. As a red hologram that is the Sovereign.
Yeah.
And
of the ship. Very specifically, it is this ship. And he says, I am beyond your comprehension. Bow before me. The Sovereign is not a ship. Specifically, the Sovereign is a Reaper.
Is a dude. You ride around in these dudes.
Yes. The Reapers, they're these, synthetic beings. And Sovereign is one of them that was like left behind to like observe things and start this invasion.
Yeah. I have two nits to pick with this as a thing. This is a famous scene in this game. Like, people talk about how this gives them chills and shit. One thing is that I think that the Sovereign's motivation, he says that it's an alien motivation we can't understand, but he still says basic ass shit like bow before me. It ends up coming off as very understandable, generic, like Silver Age comic evil.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, it's like something, you know, Kang the Conqueror would say in Fantastic Four number 9, you know, in 1962.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't come off as alien or interesting. The other thing is the twist that the ship is a creature and not a ship is treated like a really big reveal, and I didn't feel very much about it. The idea that, like, oh, it's not a ship. Like, I just, all I could think was, like, so? Like, it's a big alien. You know, we're still fighting the Reaper threat. It's, the ship is one of them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We just knew it was this really bad warship before, but now we know it's alive.
Yeah.
Like, that didn't change my plan or my posture towards it or any implications about what I had to do.
Yeah.
But every character acts like this is a really huge reveal. And, like, again, this is, I'm the outsider on this because when I read online, people talk about this being like an absolutely mind-blowing twist.
Yeah.
Like, you know, wham line and TV tropes terms. But I don't get it. Like, there's something missing here for the coolness factor of this that I just don't understand.
Yeah. I'm not going to convince you of this, but, to speak to, I think, why people think that it's, you know, a little bit cool. It makes the odds of surviving against Saren seem much worse. If this is just an alien ship, that is, you know, still threatening. Like, this is technology that nobody's seen before. Nobody can get a beat on it. That is one thing. If it is, you know, supposedly this godlike being that has, you know, previously wiped out the entirety of the galaxy, we have no idea what the actual size and shape of the Reaper threat is. I think that for a lot of people, you know, especially for me at the time, it seemed like one Reaper was bad enough news to ruin everything. Right.
I think that the game is still kind of playing a little bit of, we know the Reapers are bad, but we don't know the totality of them. Like, we're going to get the totality of them in the climax of the game.
Yes.
But at this point in the game, nobody really understands it other than that, like, it's real bad news.
Yeah.
We don't know the shape of it. Like, there's, again, that lack of specificity to it. And then reading about the sequels and learning that this is a artificial life versus organic life kind of conflict. Also is something that doesn't particularly feel super cool to me. And that's subjective. That's not a criticism.
No.
I just don't, that doesn't fire my imagination. You know, it's the Borg.
Yeah.
I've seen it before. You know, it is too Borg for me.
What gets better in the sequels is that the threat of them gets much more specific.
Yes.
What they're trying to do, different parts of their plan activate, and you can see what it means for individual people, kind of at the planet scale. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you're basically just saying this is a cycle.
Yeah.
You know, and we learn, you know, again, more twist in this. The things that we think are Prothean technology are Reaper technology. So these mass relays, which cause civilization to grow, this is what the Reapers want.
Yes. You know, they leave this stuff here for people to find and uncover, so that galactic civilization is going to grow along these predetermined paths, right?
Yes.
You know, by defining where people can travel without effort, you know, that is where people are going to, you know, end up, right?
Yes.
And he says, you know, famous line here, you exist because we allow it, you will die because we demand it.
Yeah. You can ask why, and this is where they say our ways are not for you to know.
Yeah.
Is that ever elucidated? Like, yes. What advantage they have?
Yeah. Yeah. That is elucidated. I think the reason is cool, but you know,
what is it?
It is part of their life cycle is what it is.
They have to do it to survive.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Specifically the, you know, they're waiting for, galactic civilization to rise up to a point, where they go through and basically mulch everybody and whichever of the, they go through and gather the genetic material, that raised here because they are not purely synthetic, is what it is.
They eat us.
Yes. They eat us. And that is how they make, you know, new Reapers. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yes. Okay, well, that's fine. Like, I don't know what else the motivation would be.
Yeah.
you know, like there wasn't going to be another, another thing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. More of them are coming.
Yeah.
You know, and Joker radios and says, hey, the Sovereign's coming really fast.
Yeah. You know? Like, hey, I just saw it do something that would shear another ship in half. Like, yes. It's doing impossible stuff. We need to get away here. And then the console that Sovereign is talking to us through explodes.
Yep. So we rush towards the breeding labs and deactivate this anti-aircraft gun so the Normandy could land with the nuke. Mm-hmm. And Caden calls up from the anti-aircraft tower saying his unit is pinned down, needs help. However, the Geth attack Ashley's position with the bomb.
Yeah.
And this is a famous choice in this game. You have to choose which human companion lives and which dies. I chose the bomb because the bomb has to be protected. But also I wanted to keep Ashley alive because she was useful to my party.
Mine worked out the same way. No, just told Caden, you know, just, well, you wanted to be a hero. Here you go. Yeah,
better luck next time, man. Like, anything to get rid of Headache the Man, I will do. Like, just a mod that gets rid of him or just replaces him with, like, elevator music.
Uh-huh.
You know, whenever you look at him, it just plays, you know, a MIDI of Girl from Ipanita.
Gosh. So you rush to the bomb and then Saren attacks. He explains, hey, these Reapers can't be stopped, but if we submit to them, there's a chance we might be spared. You know, if we can demonstrate that we are, if we demonstrate that we are useful, then we, you know, we might be allowed to live, which is delusional.
Yes. You get a boss fight with him. That's a preview of a much worse boss fight later.
Yeah.
He has a Green Goblin glider and just a mountain of HP.
Yes.
You don't kill him here. You just hurt him enough until he decides to run.
Yeah.
You know. Normandy comes and grabs us just in time before the nuke goes off. Ashley says it should have been her. I can only imagine that Caden would have said it should have been him.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the same way the council would have been mad either way.
Mm-hmm.
And Liara offers again to help unscramble the images of the beacon. We do this. She figures out it's a distress call sent out by the Protheans, but we're out too late.
Yeah. And she recognizes the images from the from this distress call. It is this Prothean ruin that is on a planet called Ilos, which must be the place where Saren is headed through the Mew relay. So we have we have not just the coordinates of where this relay is, but where he plans to go using it.
Yes, the council calls, and they're very happy about nuking the Krogan breeding camp. But they don't believe, you know, they believe that Saren is a threat, but not about the Reaper. Like you tell them about that, and they're like, nah, that's too much.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, okay. and they call you back to the Citadel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can check in with the crew. Liara is sorry for Saren because he's under someone's control, but thinks that he's not. You know, same thing that happened to her mom. Garrus, here for me, thanked me for teaching him to be less impulsive and says like, after this, you know, if we succeed, I'm going to go back to CSEC and, you know, resubmit for Spectre training. You know, my dad's not going to stop me.
Yeah. Fucker. Like if you try, I will strangle you.
Yeah.
Ashley talks about Caden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember the way that he kind of stood.
Yeah, I remember how much ibuprofen he went through down at the commissary. Yeah.
his liver was the size of a basketball at this point. His kidneys were begging to get out.
Yep.
Rex says make his sacrifice worth it. You know, like killed a bunch of Krogans, and new Krogans are a premium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Tali thanks you for bringing her along and treating her as an equal.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Tali and Ashley are my party from this point on because I'm eyes on the prize mechanics.
Yeah. Going full specialist is what it was. Yep. So we return to the Citadel, and the council has called us back to talk about the threat that we found, right? What they are doing is they're going to assemble a blockade to, to stop any of Saren's forces as they move, but they won't send me or a fleet to Ilos, saying like, hey, we need to. Yeah, it's going to cause
it's
a war.
It's in the neutral zone.
Yes, it is in these terminus systems outside of Citadel space. We can't risk that. And we're going to ground the Normandy. And notably, Ambassador Udina, who has always been kind of a weaselly guy, doesn't side with us. He is, he kind of sells us out in order to preserve his own power as the ambassador.
Yeah. If you have been filling up a romance meter, you get a romance scene here where your romantic interest will try to cheer you up.
Yeah.
This didn't happen for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't talk to Liara enough. to get that. To get the plausibly lesbian ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then Captain Anderson wants you to meet him. We do, and Captain Anderson goes, "I'll back you up no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. Let's steal the Normandy. You can either have me go to the security core of the council or go to Udina's computer."
Mm-hmm.
I went to Udina's computer, which he punches Udina, and we fly out.
Yeah. And then as you fly to Ilos, this is where you get the sex scene with whoever you romanced.
Is it as tasteful and hot as I imagine?
It's real Emmanuel. Goes to space kind of stuff.
Yes.
Wait, shit. I said that as a joke, but Emmanuel go to
totally went to space. It was hot. During Emmanuel goes to space during one of the scenes, for all the world, it looks like a marble falls out of her pussy. My buddy Derek watched the VHS and paused it. And it's VHS film quality, so you can't really see it.
Uh-huh.
But it looks for all the world like she's a precog. from Adventure Brothers, and she let out a little fortune marble out of her pussy.
I know this anecdote. I know about the Emmanuel Pussy Stone.
Yeah.
So
Emmanuel Pussy Stone, Agent at Large.
My question is, could it have been a Benoit ball?
It might have been. I think it might have just been a glob of lube.
Okay.
Not to be gross, but I think that might have been what it was, because it looked shiny. Mm. It looked like an Elden Ring mimic had crawled out of there. And, I got to find that movie and watch it again with DVD quality. Can we do that for Adaptation Decay? It's a Mass Effect adaptation.
I really fucked up there. I was reaching for something funny. Emmanuel goes to space. It's like, oops. Ernest goes to
camp?
Camp?
Yeah, jail? Ernest goes to jail is a very funny name for a made-up Ernest.
Uh-huh.
Like, what Ernest do?
Ernest does go to jail.
I know. I'm saying if it wasn't a real one, it would be very funny.
Yeah.
It's a truth is stranger than fiction. Yeah. He goes to jail and gets electrocuted until he gets electric powers.
Mm-hmm.
He ends that movie as Electro fucking killing people.
It turns out we were all Vern.
Yeah. I'll never forget the choice I made on Vernus in Mass Effect. You know what I mean?
Oh, gosh. Anywho. Hey, kids.
Yeah.
Welcome to Watch Out for Fireballs, your premier source for up-to-date references like Ernest and Emmanuel.
We're just going to get older, movies. Too. This is just going to get worse until we age out of relevance completely.
Oh,
we
better hope our audience ages with us. Happened.
No, yeah. I mean, age out of relevance. We're obviously relevant a little bit now
because
people pay attention to us, but that won't last forever.
Yeah.
We're just going to keep getting older and older. Yeah, fuck.
So let's go to Ilos.
Yeah, why not? Let's go to Stargate, the most Stargate of the Stargate planets.
Yeah.
We make our approach. We're surrounded by Saren ships, and we had to make this impossible dive to put the Mako in the landing zone. Joker gets his hero moment.
Yes.
It's like Joker's like, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we land. Saren seals up the bunker, so we had to fight around it. This is, the mechanical downfall of this game. We are in the absolute enemy spam of enemy spams. Like the plant monsters were my least favorite for when it happened in the game. I'm at the top of my power curve now. I have the pistol that I will use for the rest of the game. You just fight so many of the same enemies from here on in.
Yeah.
The whole rest of the game is just shoot the same thing. Walk into a room with waist high walls, do it again. Walk into a room with waist high walls, do it again. Over and over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like a Remedy game.
Yes.
Like Urkel.
So we get to one control room and we see this broken hologram repeating a Prothean distress message, which Shepard can understand, but nobody else can.
Yeah.
Because she has received the cipher. She has received a little bit of their language. All you can really make out is the words conduit, archives, and something about an attack on the Citadel that cannot be stopped.
Yes. You open up the security lockdown in the archives where Saren went, ride the Mako down there. There's a bunch of trenches with these cryopods on the side, and we get stuck between two shields that lock us in. We're like, oh, Saren did this. And one of your companions says, I don't think this is Saren.
No.
It's another hologram, a Prothean called Vigil.
Mm-hmm.
And gives a big exposition dump.
Yes.
We're not indoctrinated. It offers a warning. Basically, this is, I'm the last of the Prothean of Yais. This is information that they wish they had. The Citadel is actually a mass relay, which the Reapers can use to warp in.
Yes.
That's why they do this. The Keepers, the little spider bugs that everyone didn't question, were made by the Reapers to maintain the Citadel so they can warp in.
Yes.
It is a weird bet on behalf of the Reapers that every race for every cycle will find the Citadel and just use it without question.
And just not kill the bugs.
Yeah. Their plan is reliant on every race doing that every time it happens, which is real weird.
Yeah.
And the Protheans did it and the new aliens, like the council did it.
Yes.
I find that really strange.
Mm-hmm.
Like probably the biggest kind of, TV tropes, head scratcher in the game is why their plan relies on somebody doing that.
I'm sure there's a comic that like walks through the story. That walks through the story of like the first, you know, just the Asari finding finding the Citadel or whatever, getting it set up. Yeah.
May as well. Yeah. You know, it's already set. No questions.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently Saren's backstory is explored in one of the novels in a big way, but I'm not, not with your eyes.
Yeah. These Keepers were put there to allow these primitive species to use it without understanding it so that they could start developing along the lines here. These Reapers, where they go between cycles, they're out in dark space beyond the galaxies, right?
Yep.
And they kind of go dormant like cicadas to conserve their energies while they wait for organic civilization to build back up. And they reawaken and warp in when the Citadel relay is activated, becoming acting as like the shortcut for the invasion. So it can happen all at once. And then they flee through the Citadel relay when they're done. Along the way, because this is a huge process, they remove every trace of ever having been there.
Yes. The Protheans were working on a way to understand this. They just about got it. They had a prototype that leads back to the Citadel.
Right.
And that's what this conduit is. It's a back door to get into the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously what Saren's doing. It's a way for the Reapers to jump in.
Right.
Elo survived because it cut off contact very early. It was this research station, this place for the Protheans to wait out the catastrophe in cryosleep. However, this genocide that the Reapers were doing took decades and decades. Energy ran out, so they had to start cutting off life support.
Yeah.
To different Protheans, like they had to start, calling their shots.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to keep alive?
Right.
To finish this project.
Yeah. And the final Protheans, the final scientists, use the conduit as this one-way warp to the Citadel to go in and sabotage the Keepers so they wouldn't be able to respond to the Sovereign's command to open the relay.
Why the Keepers aren't just, again, flushed, I don't get it. I don't know why the Protheans wouldn't have done that.
Right.
Like, it's a little weird that everyone on the Citadel is just like, I don't know, they're just weird bugs. They live here, But, I understand people who don't kill a spider in their house.
Yeah.
But it's weird that the Protheans didn't.
It has to be that they see how useful they are and decide like, oh, there's no way for us to keep this up because we don't know enough about this place. So they need to have just demonstrated their value.
But they understand the threat. Like, doesn't that not seem worth the risk?
They don't understand the threat.
Like, the Protheans do.
I mean, these scientists figured it out after the invasion started.
they're saying that. So the final Protheans who did figure it out, use the conduit to warp back and sabotage the Keepers.
Yes.
So they wouldn't respond to the signal. So they know about the Sovereign's command. And instead of getting rid of the Keepers, they just sabotage them.
Yeah, because it was all they could do because the process was already started. Yeah.
I guess it feels like there's you literally catalog the Keepers.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't have that collectathon quest in the game, like you might think, oh, there are countless Keepers.
Even at the end of the catalog quest, you don't know anything about them.
No, but you know how many there are. They could flush them all out of an airlock. There's like 30.
I don't know that it's implied. It has never stated that you scan all of them is the thing. It's just the 30 that are available for you to scan because it's a video game quest.
It feels like weak, again, like making a lot of assumptions, any number of which, if it didn't work out exactly how they planned it, through millennia of history, would just make this whole thing not work.
Yeah. I'm not saying that just because an explanation exists, it should be persuasive. I'm just presenting the information as it exists from the series.
It's a weird way that something that is kind of, interesting as a plot thing, like this idea that, oh, these things that we thought were innocuous are actually very insidious. This thing that we thought was just a windfall is actually like the key to our doom is a cool thing, but they bend over really backwards to make it true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we, so as Earthlings, without our advanced hyper intellect, we are trying to come up with ways to warn people about nuclear power sites.
Mm-hmm.
The Protheans didn't try to come up with a way to signal that the Keepers were maybe no good. You know,
but they didn't know the Keepers were maybe no good until after the invasion had started.
No, the scientist.
Yeah.
I'm saying that the scientist who went back to sabotage the Keepers, who did know.
Yeah. And then they left this information here because taking the warp was a one way thing. They had to leave the information here, hoping that people would find it. And then go in and, you know, sabotage the Keepers.
When they could leave the information with the Keepers when they went in to sabotage the Keepers. Like they knew the whole idea was people were going to find the Citadel.
But the Reapers were going to get rid of that. The Reapers didn't know that these scientists were here. That's how they survived for all those decades. Yeah.
I guess that's true. It's very, very rickety, I think. It feels rickety to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this might be nitpicky, but it feels rickety to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can
buy it just because of how useful the Keepers, you know, would have been on the, you know, on the Citadel, you know, very specifically there to make sure that this miraculous thing is usable by people who don't understand it, who don't understand how it works. And in a way, like, to stop people from trying to figure out how it works. Oh, it works because of the Keepers, right? So we just rely on it. Yeah.
I guess that's also still a big ask for me.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, millennia would go by and people would just be like, no, that's just handled. That's, you know, we don't need to know that because that's dialed mm-hmm. by mechanical bugs that live here.
Yeah.
That also still feels like a big stretch to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's part of it is the stakes. Like mm-hmm. part of it is that there's nothing, it's very hard to activate any kind of relatability to that because there's nothing I can mirror it with.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I go somewhere, like I don't get on a plane and then immediately like ask how the plane works,
mm-hmm.
you know, but if I were found a plane, I wouldn't start flying in it without knowing how it worked.
Right.
You know, as a people, we wouldn't do that over generations and generations and generations.
Right.
And multiple aliens, many of which are much more technologically advanced and inclined
mm-hmm.
than we are, all do making that same dumb mistake.
Yeah.
Is just weird
mm-hmm.
to me. I don't know. It ends up working in the moment. But it ends, the more I think about it, the more it falls apart
mm-hmm.
as a thing.
Yeah.
So he gives us a signal that we can use on the Keepers, which will grant us control over the Citadel. So we can stop it. Stop the thing, but we have to get to the conduit first before Saren.
Yeah.
And this is cool. I like this.
Oh, the big race. Yeah.
Yeah. This race that you go through to jump into the portal and then like haul ass, like warp into the Citadel and crash into a bunch of guys. Like this looks cool.
Yeah.
This is effectively a badass scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going off a big ramp to jump through it.
Yeah. I think this is pretty rad.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing where, again, Mass Effect 1, a lot of people, the reputation of it is that it is a pulp sci-fi
mm-hmm.
thing. It always feels more dry to me than that. Like it doesn't feel like fun. Let's haul ass.
Yeah.
This is a scene that does seem like, you know, now this is pod racing.
Yes.
As a scene.
Yeah. Stuff that happens in the back part of this is cool. Not the boss fight, but like, you know,
the mechanics I don't like. The things that are happening are cool.
Yeah. So we crash, you know, the Mako is unusable. And we are in the Presidium and things are in terrible shape. Everything's kind of on fire. That, you know, Saren is up at the Citadel Tower, approaching the council chambers. And he issues a command to close the Citadel's arms. The Citadel is kind of like a big flower. So this mm-hmm. is like doing a reverse bloom kind of thing. And the Sovereign is outside and just straight like plows through whole fleets to get inside and clasp onto the Citadel tower before the legs close, kind of locking us in.
Yep. They cannot fight it.
Yeah.
Their weapons are largely useless.
Yeah.
So we get the series of fights.
Yeah.
A very long series of hallways up the Citadel leg.
The nice thing here is you don't actually have to do these fights. It is, you are not incentivized to kill everything here. You're hauling ass up the Citadel leg, but like, you know, you can just run is the thing.
Yeah.
Take out just enough to make enough, you know, space to get to the next area.
Yeah. You get up there and eventually you reach Saren. He's more Borged out. He has more techno implants.
Yeah.
you know, says this is the future, I am the future of life in the galaxy,
mm-hmm.
like the synthetic and organic merged.
Right.
You can convince him that he's a puppet here. Yeah. I didn't get this option or I didn't find it.
Hmm.
I don't know what it was. Yeah. Did not follow the right dialogue things. Had to do the boss fight with the two phases of this boss fight.
Yeah. You can skip the first phase of this by convincing him like, hey, no, like, don't you understand? Like, you let Sovereign put all this stuff in you. You're indoctrinated. You actually don't have any free will here. You know, if you want to help life, then get out of the way. And then he does, you know, the classic BioWare thing. Yeah. Just he kills himself. He shoots himself in the head. Yeah.
Suicides. You had to fight him anyway. They have to put in a boss fight. Here. If you don't have him shoot himself, it's basically the Goblin Glider boss fight from the first part.
Yeah.
You regain control of the station and start opening the arms and get transmissions from the Council flagship.
Mm-hmm.
They're under fire and they say, hey, can you sacrifice the Alliance fleet to save us?
Yeah.
This is meant to be like a big, you know, Paragon Renegade choice
mm-hmm.
as a thing. There's so many like good, you know, sacrificing everyone to save a council, save just mm-hmm. a couple people.
Yeah.
Feels like a bad choice no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's presented as like the good thing to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a line along there's three options. There's like, fuck them. We want to get rid of them mm-hmm. so we can run the council. There's the important thing is protecting the Citadel.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's no, let's sacrifice the fleet.
Yeah.
Sacrifice the fleet does not land up on any kind of moral axis.
Yeah.
Like nobody would do that. Why would you sacrifice an entire army for three generals?
Yeah.
You know, like individual person would make that choice.
Yeah. It is poorly communicated, but what you are doing is like having humanity make a sacrifice in order to hold up the stability of the galactic government.
Yes.
That's what it is. That is how it is portrayed afterwards.
That's how it would play out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a choice somebody would make.
Right.
Like, I don't think this choice reads as very real.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling.
Yeah. Deciding what to do with the Destiny Ascension is one of the big choices that carries forward mm-hmm. and sets up whatever your status quo in Mass Effect 2 is going to be. Letting the council die is one like next to the Rachni, or, you know, killing the Rachni, the most renegade thing you can do. Yeah.
So to me, the only moral choice seemed like, no, that we have to concentrate on the greater good. Like we are trying to stop this incursion. Mm-hmm. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I said that. And afterwards, everyone was like, so pretty good job for humanity, huh? We're in a position to win. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I wasn't thinking about that because the whole thing is a greater scope. Like, I'm not worried about our piddly little place in the universe. I'm trying to save the universe itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you still worried about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everyone is acting like I should have been thinking about that the entire time.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand the stakes of this game. I don't think it does a good job with that.
Yeah.
So I cannot understand the mindset that's like, save the council
mm-hmm.
in this.
Yeah, no. I just when I was playing through the first time, and I was, you know, kind of, you know, just going Paragon, but like not Paragon enough to have enough points to save Rex, you know, mm-hmm. I was just following my nose and ended up in that place. I basically made the same choice you did, by taking the, like, you know, we need to focus on saving this, you know, the Citadel at all costs. You know, a new council can be elected. Like there are plenty of people who can fill those roles. Right.
Yeah.
And then to have it be like, you bastard, you human supremacist.
It's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it is the way that this game's moral axes line up and don't line up.
Mm-hmm.
To me is a real caution about oversimplification of things like that, which is the BioWare.txt, right? Like usually just good evil, but here they're trying to make it orthogonal to that, but it doesn't allow for any kind of nuance.
No,
you know, by simplifying it, which this is the BioWare story, by simplifying role-playing games, they make role-playing games worse. Like the role-playing thing part of these gets worse. The game isn't necessarily worse. Like I fully believe that like Mass Effect 2 is a super good game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a game, but I bet it is not a super good role-playing game because they are not really doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not really interested in it. And they simplify things down to, you know, similar to like Dragon Quest simplifying a role-playing game
mm-hmm.
down to just you climb the mountain, get the stats up and you get past the hill.
Yeah.
You know, there's a real caution to oversimplification, I think,
mm-hmm.
that comes from this company.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think that Mass Effect 2 does succeed more, despite despite being a little bit more simplified in the role playing department by not pretending that by dropping the pretense that they are trying to make the kind of role playing game, you know, where those kind of choices are explicitly going to matter, and making the entire story much more focused on you and your crew.
Yeah,
and the
like
stakes
zooming
there.
In helps. Yeah. It's very rare something isn't helped by zooming in.
Yes,
you know, yeah. It's worth noting too that this choice isn't bad because it doesn't matter. It's mm-hmm. bad because it does matter, but it's not. It only matters on this weird binary that is immaterial to the choice you're actually making. Like, I wasn't making a human supremacist choice to try to fight off the Reaper and save the universe. Mm-hmm. But the game has this very limited, like, morality that quantizes everything into that, you know? And it just doesn't do it a service. It doesn't feel real.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So I did that. I was like, yeah, save the Citadel. We're fighting for the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why wouldn't we do that?
Yeah.
It turned out to be a bad idea for the whole thing.
I remember feeling burned by the way this choice was framed, and by the way, it paid off as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll save infinite lives to save these three dorky aliens.
Yeah. Who've been nothing but jerks who basically, like, if they die, it is them getting their just desserts. We got to this point because of the fact that they didn't take it seriously.
100%. And it's not just that they're jerks. Like, they're trying, you could do something interesting where the game is trying to make you not like them, but you have to respect them and see the greater good.
Yeah.
For them. But they make them fly in the face of the greater good at every point.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this game does not present any argument for the council.
Right.
Ever. Regardless of how you're acting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's part of, you know, go back to the first episode. There's no point in this game where you're invited to think, like, maybe they're right and humanity does suck.
Yeah.
Like, the council is always bad in this. It is a deeply conservative game. The UN sucks and it would be better off without it.
Yeah.
Rah-rah humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So you drop down to confirm that Saren is dead. Your companion shoots him in the head,
mm-hmm.
But then his body starts animating, so you can have a boss fight.
Yeah.
The implants burst out of him and turn him into a monster.
Yeah,
and he fights like a Geth-stalker that is joined by Geth-stalkers
mm-hmm.
or Geth-stalkers. This sucks.
Yeah,
you shoot him forever.
Yep.
It's an eternity boss fight.
Mm-hmm. And the trick is you just have to keep a lift on him the entire time, and then you know just plink him down.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Yeah.
He'll continuously call in waves.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually you kill him and he disintegrates.
Yeah.
He dies.
Oh. Yeah, he's gone. Yeah. The machine stops working. Outside, the fleets have all worked together and they've taken down the Sovereign's shields. And Joker does this maneuver to get in close enough to deal this killing blow. And the wreckage crashes down onto the Citadel Tower.
Yep. And because of all this stuff, it looks like Shepard's dead. Everyone's freaking out. But then Shepard gets out of the, climbs out of the rubbish. The rubbish?
The wreckage? I think you're doing rubbish and wreckage together?
Yeah, the rubbish wreckage.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, depending on what you did.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the ambassador is like, pretty sly move, getting rid of the council like that. Now we can ascend.
Yeah.
I got a choice whether to put the ambassador, who has been a huge dickhead this entire time, or the counselor on the new... Or the captain on the new council.
Do you lift up Udina or Anderson?
Yeah. Yes. Udina, who again, the game has not done anything to make seem like they would be good or in your interest or mm-hmm. for the greater good or makes no argument for the entire game. Like every choice in this game, they don't make an argument for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's not important to me. I've got, you know, Reapers to kill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how it ended.
Yeah, I pretty much said it. It was like, yeah, no, just that's not my choice. Like, leave that to humanity.
Yeah,
Is what it is.
The I way legit it works, don't give a shit.
Yeah, if you put Anderson up there, he's fucking miserable because he's not a politician.
Okay.
And Udina, I think he's still a jerk, but he ends up performing better because he's made for that, whereas Anderson is not.
Yeah, I just didn't get a sense of how they would operate on a council.
Mm-hmm.
Nor what value a council has other than as a totemic, like humanity's made it.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, symbolic victory.
You just kind of don't see the good that the council does, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't see until Mass Effect 2 what stuff looks like outside of Citadel space, you know?
So, the frustrating thing is that there's no reason they couldn't have.
Right.
You know, like we're getting to the end. Like, you know, mm-hmm. this is the end.
Yeah.
you know, humanity, you get a seat on the council either through rebuilding it or the council deigning to give you one because you sacrificed untold human lives to save theirs. You say the battle isn't over and you get credits.
Yeah.
There's no reason this game could not have stood alone better than it does.
Yeah.
There's room in this. Mm-hmm. There are resources and time and words and writing put into shitty side quest after shitty side quest in this game that could have been used to show more of these things.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about when reading, you know, I didn't do a bunch of the side quest, you know, I'll cop to that, but I read about them.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at the things the side quest chose to reveal to you about the world, they were never answers to questions I had.
No.
And they were never things that provided additional context to the main ways the central conflicts in this game are lacking.
Yes.
Like, and it's just such a crime of opportunity. Like, if this works as the first part of a trilogy that eventually fulfills the promises this tries to do, that's one thing. At the same time, it is also a big role-playing game that should stand on its own, the way that the first movie and trilogies do. You know, imagine if the tone and stakes of, like, you know, the Two Towers was entirely different.
Right.
You know, to that. And if you watch the Fellowship of the Ring, you're just like, why do they even care about the ring? The movie didn't make any say anything about why they should care about the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden in the second one, they show the politics.
Yeah.
You know, it is a really deeply weird game in that respect.
Yeah. I'm going back to a word that, you know, a phrase that I used a lot in the previous episode, but I think does line up with what you're saying is this is so rinky dink. Like going back to it, especially, you know, especially later on and, you know, reading, you know, the context, you know, the things that people criticized this for at the time, this was always kind of this, like, you know, minimum viable product. Right.
Yeah.
In terms of we got to get this out the door, you know, regardless of how successful this is as a product of itself, like we need to get this out there and just hope that there's enough interest that we can continue and like kick the can down the road a little bit to have more time to answer these questions.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, a lot of the baggage that they had on this also, you know, just those, you know, the shitty side quests that end up not mattering too much. It was kind of because they felt like they needed to have them because they were pretending this was, you know, a KOTOR follow-up kind of thing. But like side quests and KOTOR are good. They decided to have them and didn't actually prioritize giving you cool stuff to do or think about or information to reveal to you in them. They're so perfunctory. That's like a back of the box bullet point kind of thing.
Having them isn't the problem. It's like the words they chose to put in them.
Anybody can take the reservation. Yeah,
exactly. Like a very, very weird part about this is that the stakes for this trilogy sound like from reading about the later games and talking to people that it kind of moves backwards. Like you could, a traditional story structure might start small and personal and then become about this.
Yeah.
Like it's weird that it starts with humanity's place in the universe as opposed to like, you know, starting in the situation Ashley was in with her parents, you know, like starting small and getting big would have felt a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
We would have learned things at the same, you know, no matter how they wanted to do it. Right. Like maybe do a time jump. Like all of this, you know, learning about humanity stuff and learning about humanity's space on the council or what have you starts with you as a, you know, as a colonist.
Yeah.
Like learning it, knocking the stuff through codexes, but living it. And then maybe you do a time jump, you know, your Shepherd's great grandchild.
Yeah. It's like they like. They really, really wanted to rush the hero's journey. So they hand waved so much of it, like 2/3 of it. And then decided, oh, wait, shit. No. We can't that's not a way that you tell a story. We need to like back up and start a little bit, you know, like, let's do this rebirth here and then actually like start a story where it needs to be, where it needs to start. Right.
What's fascinating about it is that like, when you talk to people about this game, a lot of affection is backported onto the characters, even as they appear in this game, even though I think for the most part, like some of them are charismatic, some of them are not, but for the most part, you're not getting a lot for them. If they had started on that small scale, you know, with the getting the band together thing that is the second one, all of this stuff would work a lot better because I would care about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like imagine knowing Liara and caring about Liara and then mm-hmm. confronting your mother.
Yes.
As opposed to meeting Liara, you know, an hour ago
mm-hmm.
and then talking to her mother.
Yeah.
Like that scene was such a wet fart of emotionalness because I had to just kind of like, I understand what the relationship of a mother and child is,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know who either of these people are. And more importantly, I don't give two rats shits about mm-hmm. them.
I have no reason to believe that Benezia was anything other than what she is.
Yeah.
Right.
And him just telling me it at the end, there's no emotional truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Benezia just tells you this. So you have to round up so much with your heart
mm-hmm.
for this to have any kind of stake and to be the epic thing it wants to be.
Yeah. Well, Gary, it's a morality test. Do you care about just the platonic ideal, the idea of a mother? You know how there's a there's a weight somewhere in France that is the kilometer, the kilogram. Like, okay, can you care about the mother that is in France in a little vacuum chamber that is the mother?
All those novels that are about. You're just a character who's the relationship between two characters, their mm-hmm. mother and child, and that's it.
Yes.
You know, nothing
that's
is
all
developed.
You need to know.
That's all you need to know. You mm-hmm. know, it's just, it's using so much shorthand for things. And it bummed me out. Like it depressed me to play because it's like repetitive and like grinds you down
mm-hmm.
in terms of the play.
Yeah.
And then when you get to these choices, even the ones that seem cool initially, the more I thought about them, the less I like them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think this is a very good game. And I think I've decided I don't really like this company.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean, you know, we'll never do another thing by them. I'd love to do Dragon Age 1 at some point.
Yeah.
And see, like, you know, as the closest contemporary to this, like KOTOR is closer to it, but in terms of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, Dragon Age 1, and it's more in my wheelhouse, and I remember liking it okay, even if it, though it does have the three spokes with three spokes issue.
Yeah.
You know, it's structurally almost the same thing. Is this, like, I don't know. This company is very problematic to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah. I've been treating myself to a replay of Alpha Protocol, and I try not to let the great be the enemy of the good.
Yeah.
But like, Jesus Christ, in terms mm-hmm. of role-playing stuff, is that serve this thing lunch.
It is wild, the differing reception that these things got.
It's super wild because that game, also, this game is not mechanically better than that game.
No, not at
like,
all.
People are like, oh, Alpha Protocol is janky.
Yeah.
And like, have you fucking played Mass Effect?
Mm-hmm.
Like the plant monsters who just walk back and forth in a row.
Yeah.
You know, the Zumbini plant monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it the Zumbinis who walk back and forth?
No, you're thinking of the creatures.
I was thinking of the creatures. Yeah.
Yeah.
The creatures, the plant creatures.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It's just a weird feeling of being out of step with gaming at large, where I go to conventions mm-hmm. and there's thousands and thousands of Mass Effect t-shirts and posters.
Yeah.
And stuff.
No, yeah. They're just when somebody says I love Mass Effect, just
they mean
what Mass they mean is they mean Mass Effect too. Yeah.
Yeah. They mean Andromeda.
Yep.
If you like the show, we appreciate it. If you have things to say about Mass Effect 2, I think you have a day.
About Mass Effect.
Or Mass Effect 1. Yeah, if you have things to say about Mass Effect 2, save it.
Yes.
I think if you have things to say about Mass Effect 1, and specifically Mass Effect 1.
Yes.
You know, no reason to write in, just be Mass Effect 2 is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a day.
Yes.
It's the 15th.
Yep. For Mass Effect or for Slayers X, Terminal Aftermath, Vengeance of the Slayers.
Mm-hmm.
Which is our premium episode for the month. Go to duckv.tv/contact, click the WAF button and write in. If you have thoughts about, you know, multiple games, please split that into multiple responses. Same is true for January's games, which are The Case of the Golden Idol, Darkest Dungeon 2, and Blasphemous 2. The deadline there.
Episode.
Yes. The deadline there is January the 15th.
Yep. Big thanks to everybody who donated, watched, and contributed to Duckstream.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first WAF we're recording after that. Big success.
Yeah.
Exceeded our goal quite a bit. Very happy to help out. And we really appreciate everyone who helped out, both in, you know, behind the scenes and contributed.
Yes.
To that.
Yeah. Go check out Real Lich Hours. That is out by the time you are hearing this. It is a real fun show. You know, the episodes that we've recorded were a very good time. It is different in structure, but we think it's good. We think, it's kind of refreshing.
Yeah. We like it. Open to feedback. Mm-hmm. Definitely early on in a show is the best time to tell your friends about it. The first couple episodes are going to be on the public feed, but that is going to be a Patreon show as Bonfireside Chat moves to a seasonal model. So tell people. You have friends who are playing Baldur's Gate 3. Tell them about this cool show.
Yeah.
The one episode a week, you know, $1.25 per episode, plus a gabillion other things you get for $5, including our Baldur's Gate 2 episode. And Divinity Original Sin 2 episode, which is not a premium, but also it's on the feed. There's so much fucking stuff. More than a decade.
So much.
So leave us ratings and reviews. If you are not demographically identical to us, if you are not a, if you're not a Caden, then write in at gary@duckfeed.tv and with a project you'd like us to shout out or something you're working on, and we'd be happy to do it. Include your pronouns, pronunciation, and a summary and a link for us. Anything else?
Rate and review, and join us in thanking our producer, Gwen. Thank you, Gwen.
Very much so. Thank you, Gwen. Until next time, what should they watch out for?
Watch out for Shepherd. She gets results.
She does.
But that's
get
good, actually.
If you want result, the main thing I want is results.
Yeah.
It turns out. Shepherd, Dr. Shepherd's on the phone. We've got your results.
Hell yeah.